Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, we are going to be watching a little nostalgia here on the show today. My guest is in St. Louis, Missouri, and it's snowing a little bit there, not a whole bunch, but it's giving that little bit of that magical wonder of the holiday season with the blessing of the dusting of white. And my guest today is Murray Nabors, and he's a professor of biology, but we're going to be talking about some things that you wouldn't expect a professor of biology to be, well, writing about, romantic Christmas stories of the Old West. We're going to find out more about this unique man that has a fascinating history and also lives quite an interesting life. Hi, Murray. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Donna.
Well, it's a delight having you, and we had the opportunity to become acquainted, I should say, over a year ago, and this year you have got this wonderful book, Romantic Christmas Stories of the Old West, but we've got to find out a little bit more about you. You have apparently been a student of American history, especially of the Old West, for a long time. You're the Dean of Liberal Arts and Sciences and Professor of Biology at Missouri Western State University. You have had a personal taste of your own of the Wild West, but not only that, you have a small farm where you have all kinds of critters that you take care of, and you've published other books. What made you decide that you really wanted to write about, first of all, romantic items and the Old West as it was? You know, there's so much romanticization about this, but it was a pretty rugged time of living when you were in that environment. It was a pretty tough space. What? How did you get fascinated with it, or why were you even intrigued by the Old West?
It's a great question. I always liked the Old West and Westerns. I didn't get interested in Westerns until midlife. My dad always used to come out and visit in the summer, and he'd go buy a Louis L'Amour Western and sit in the front porch and read it and throw it in the garbage. And one summer I fished it out of the garbage, and I think I read all 84 of his books that summer and got hooked.
Oh,
but, you know,
goodness.
Those guys like Louis L'Amour, they didn't write about Christmas. Christmas stories and Westerns somehow didn't go together, and I like Charles Dickens. He wrote, of course, A Christmas Carol, but what some people don't know is he wrote a Christmas story or a Christmas reminiscence every single Christmas, and so I decided to put the yearly Christmas story and the Westerns together and started writing them for my family, that we kind of read them around the Christmas tree.
What a wonderful tradition. Now, this book has over 20 stories in it, but what was the first one? What was the first story that you put together that you shared with your family? I bet they had fun critiquing you, or did you get much in the way of critiquing?
Well, the first story is the one that's the first one in the book. It's called The End of the Line Kid, and it's a story about a kid who lives at the end of the school bus line or the school sleigh line, and it turns out is living by himself because his parents have died, but he wants to go to school.
Mm-hmm. And there's a young lady that gets involved in this story. It's pretty tough because what you describe is a way of life that I don't think many people could even associate with. But you have a time, there were no furnaces in the houses. If you didn't have wood, you didn't have heat. You had often buildings that were just nothing but a piece of wood between you and the elements that were outside. And this is a very touching story because you called him the kid.
He was the kid. That's what everybody called him. He was just the kid. And you're right. People were, life was hard. They were alone. Nobody knew much about the kid except that he lived over in that direction. I told my daughters this morning it was bitterly cold when we got in the car and it was dark. And I said, well, how'd you like to be down there saddling up the horse so you could ride to school and trying to get that leather to do all kinds of things when it's 15 degrees? They didn't think they'd want to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And an interesting thing is, though, that there were a series of depressions in the 1800s. They call them panics in those days. And one of them was in 1837. And a lot of people lost everything. It all had to do with speculation over land and banks and so on. Does that sound
mm-hmm.
familiar?
Oh, my gracious. Look at what we're going through now. My word.
And so a lot of people went west because they lost everything. And so they ended up out west. Maybe they were miners or maybe they were cowboys or trying to run a store. And they were alone and they were lonely. And they didn't think anything of riding 25 or 30 miles for a Christmas dance at the schoolhouse or hand-making decorations to hang on a Christmas tree because they didn't have any money to buy any. It was a hard time, and I think that made them celebrate Christmas even harder.
And I know I had a guest on yesterday, and we were talking about the early colonial days and how fruits and things, nuts and things like this were not common. They were really luxury items, and actually they were considered luxury items up and through into the 50s, I think, until we really got our highways built where, trucks could transport fruits and vegetables and trains could do it when the refrigeration units started getting built. All of these things have evolved relatively recently. And I think of a program I saw, it was about 6 months ago, about some kids in Oregon, city kids, that were taken out on a ranch that this couple it had been in the family for I don't know how many generations. And these city kids, for the first time, were around cows, were around horses, were around different animals. They had no clue. They didn't have a clue about what it was like to work a ranch. And by the time they finished, their whole perspective of life had changed. And that's part of the magic of your writings, because you go into somewhat different time frames. You know, go from the 1800s or all the way up to about 2009, 2010, you have a blending with your different stories that really is quite fascinating. And people in those days, in the 1800s, early 1900s, I mean, I can remember my grandmother talking about living on a farm. It took you, like you mentioned a moment ago, ages to get from point A to point B. I mean, you really had to plan. If you were going to go into town, it was an all-day journey.
Oh, yeah, and those animals have to be cared for every morning and every evening. And I was out this morning breaking the ice and, you know, putting some warm water in so everybody could have a drink, and it was dark. And people nowadays don't remember those times, you know. They don't think about how hard it was for people.
That's for sure. And I know up here in the state of Washington, we get a good dose of reality periodically when we have severe storms and the power goes out and we don't have electricity and nobody has their computers. You can't do anything. You've got to use lights and candles and all kinds of things to be able to see, number one, because our days are shorter and shorter. And then, number two, keeping warm is a challenge. And that's something that, again, you bring to life in a very special way that I think just makes the Christmas stories, the romantic Christmas stories of the Old West, so wonderful. And you've got a story in here, the cat, the cowboy, and the Christmas Eve train. What was the inspiration for this story?
A lot of the stories that I have written, the Christmas stories, come about because I read a lot of journals of people who lived in the Old West, and I read about something, and people who journaled in that time were not into talking about their feelings. They said in one case, well, the train couldn't go on because there was a big snowdrift and everybody had to spend the night. And so I took that journal entry and thought, well, what were those people like? What would they have said? Where would they have stayed? What would they have eaten? And all of that kind of thing. And so all of the stories are based on a fact, and if I mention a place in the story, you know, by name, it's there. Mm-hmm. So that's where that particular story came from. The railroad was shut down because of snow, and everybody ended up in town, and it was Christmas Eve, and about the only thing going on in town was a big Christmas celebration at the saloon, and there happened to be a homesteader in there who had a place to put up four or five people. And then the romance comes in because one of the people he put up ends up falling in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I like romantic stories. I like stories with happy endings and feel-good stories. And so I guess there were a lot of times in the Old West when things didn't end up happily, but they do in my stories.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that comes out to that is how people pulled together, because it was, one, essential to survival, and number two, it got pretty lonely because people were very isolated. So when you had a big to-do like a Christmas dance and a storm comes in, and you really have to take care of each other to make sure that everybody's going to be okay. It's vitally important, and you can't assume anything. So your stories are just so filled with wonderful descriptions, and I think the Screaming Eagle Saloon was a wonderful title to give that saloon. And all of the different things that go on the romantic side, and it just shows how sometimes people can come together and they discover something about themselves, and they realize that maybe there's an opportunity for them in a very special way. And that's what happens with this young woman in the story of the cat, the cowboy, and the Christmas Eve train. And then you've got another one, The Beginning of a Christmas Eve Romance. Now, you place this in Colorado, and many times the stories are around Colorado. Is there a reason why you chose Colorado more than, let's say, California or Nevada or Arizona, New Mexico? Is there a reason why Colorado especially was a trigger for you in location?
Another good question. I lived in Colorado for about 25 years, and actually a couple of years ago I took off from college teaching for a year, took a leave of absence, and I taught high school on the Southern Ute Indian Reservation down near Durango, and I spend a fair amount of time in Durango because of the narrow gauge railroad and the things that we like, and my son and his family live there, and so I'm attracted to Colorado, especially in the winter and especially around Christmas time, and that's where this particular story came from. This is one that's accurate in terms of how Durango looked in 1885 and what was going on. It's a pretty short story. It's only about 3.5 pages long, but somehow during that time, this rancher named Jed Barrow manages to strike up a relationship with a very interesting young lady that looks like it might go somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Her name is Serafina.
That's
and
the title of the story, yeah.
She's got a personality all of her own, which is marvelous. And then, again, this is in Silverton, Colorado. We talk about blizzards, and we don't often hear conversations about them. I think one of the most important books that I read when I was in elementary school, the school had just gotten their library, and so I was able to check out a book. It was brand new, and it was about a blizzard in the Dakotas. And I can still remember parts of that book just as clearly as if I had it in my hand. And the bitterness of those blizzards, we don't experience them to the degree that it was experienced in the late 1800s, early 1900s, but people would freeze to death and would starve to death if those blizzards lasted a long time. Did Silverton have a record-breaking blizzard in 1883?
They did. They had two in the late 1800s, and that was the year of one of them. And actually, that's a time when Wyatt Earp and his girl, Josie Marcus, were arriving in that country, and they actually had to get into Silverton by going through waist-deep snow in certain places, and the train was indeed shut down. They built a narrow-gauge railroad from Durango on up into the mountains at Silverton, and the reason they did was that there was a lot of gold and silver at Silverton, but there was so little oxygen in the air at that elevation that they couldn't refine it, so they had to ship it down to Durango to refine it, and that's how come the railroad was there. So that part of the story is quite true, and a lot of those blizzards, like you said, people watched out for each other. Was the book that you read in school the Laura Ingalls Wilder book about the blizzard?
I honestly don't remember. I just remember the book was about 2 inches thick. And
oh,
I remember vividly the story of the family that was out in the open plains. This blizzard came in, and their animals, they didn't even know that they were going to survive because the blizzard lasted so long. And they were down to like one potato to split among, let's say, 6 or 7 people because there were a lot of children. And they just, luckily, just by the grace of God, as I would say, the storm stopped. It was cold, but it stopped. But these people had stores of food that were underground because the ground temperature was stable that way. And they had stocked up for winter, but nobody had expected this horrific blizzard. And that's why this particular story struck a chord with me, because in the story you talk about stockpiling wood, making sure you have plenty of clothes. And I remember my grandmother telling me in the early 1900s when she was growing up that that's what you did all summer. Summertime wasn't time too much for play. You had to work. You had to collect your food. You had to make sure that it was put up. You had to dry it, salt it, you know, cure it maybe in vinegar, whatever you were going to do, or pack it in sugar. But you had to do something to preserve it because they didn't have 7-Elevens on every corner like we've got today, nor did they have the processing plants available where people had access to food readily. They didn't grow it, and she was in Virginia. Then they had a heck of a time. So it was the job of the women. The men were often out in the fields bringing the stuff in, and that meant hay for the horses and the cows and whatever else needed to be taken care of during the winters. The Dakotas were known for their brutal winters. So those people that had lived there, they had really taken care of it. And in Virginia, sometimes you could have some pretty extreme weather, too. So the people on the farms, wasn't as bad as Dakota, I don't think, but it still was pretty bad. But you really had to, like you said earlier, you have to watch out for your animals and look for all kinds of things. You really have to take care of it, and water is so important. How much water do your cows drink a day?
Oh, I would say the big animals that we have probably drink 25 or 30 gallons when they're on hay. So I was home at noon. It was below freezing all day, so I went home at noon to break the ice and make sure that everybody had enough water to drink. You know, we were trapped one time in Silverton by a blizzard that closed all of the roads, in modern times, of course. But that's what gave me the idea for this story, and I started looking into the history of it. And blizzard would hit in a town like Silverton or in North Dakota, and the people would look out for each other. They'd go house to house to make sure everybody had wood and nobody was freezing to death, and that's exactly what happens in this story. And sometimes it was people from the wrong end of town helping out people in the good end of town and vice versa. Those kinds of distinctions sort of broke down during hard times, and everybody pitched in and helped out.
Right, because if they didn't, they knew they were going to find people frozen in their beds.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the cold is so bitter. And cold, I don't know if many of our listeners have experienced it. I have. I've been in cold like 70 below zero. And when you're in that kind of cold, it sucks everything out of you. You think your eyes are going to explode out of the sockets. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible, and it can be that bitter cold and the sun is shining, you wouldn't think you'd have a problem. But I've known of people that their ears froze on them, and their ears literally stood out perpendicular to the side of their heads, and they just suffered excruciatingly because they were people that had come from the southern area of the United States where the temperatures are fairly warm. It got a little bit cool once in a while, but compared to the bitter, bitter cold winters that the northern environments get, no way, they weren't prepared at all. And I've heard stories from so many, many people. When you were putting this together, how all of these stories, you have over 20 of them, Was it like, did you write more than one during a year? Did you make it a tradition with your family that you were going to have a new story every Christmas?
I have written one a year on almost every year, and then gradually collected them. And there are actually two more stories that I've written, and people who get the book will get those two extra stories, so they'll actually get 23 stories. And I've got a couple of ideas for this year's story, and when finals are over in a week, I'm really looking forward to sitting down and getting busy on that. And I'm thinking that this year's story might take place in Alaska. You were talking about 70 below, and I've been thinking about the Klondike and those terrible conditions that the miners endured. And, you know, I have a nice goose down parka, but in those days the clothes were nice and thick, but they didn't protect you from the cold quite like the high-tech stuff we've got now, you know.
I'll share with you something quickly when you mention that. There is an awareness, and I heard this story from a fellow on a flight back from Fairbanks, Alaska, who was in the clothing business. And he was a musher, and he said that he didn't realize how much the native Alaskans, the Eskimos, were, how knowledgeable they were about keeping warm. And whenever he would do any of his racing, like with the Iditarod or any of the other races that they have throughout the state, his hands would just freeze. He had injured his hands, and his wrists had been broken because of various work that he had done through the years. And whenever he'd go out to participate in these activities, he'd be in so much pain. So a buddy of his said, well, gee whiz, let me take you to this village in Alaska, and there's an old lady there who's in her 80s, and I bet you she can fix you up so you won't have this pain and won't suffer from the cold. So that's exactly what they did. They went out to the village, and the woman said, I can fix this for you. So she ended up making him wristbands out of fur. She made him a parka out of fur, and he had the leggings. She even made him a sleeping bag, but his leggings and his mukluks and his parka kept him so warm, and these wristbands that she made for him out of fur, he wanted to know what it was, and she said, I'm not going to tell you. She said, won't tell the white man, won't tell you what it is. And so he did a race, and he said he did not have cold hands at all. He was just amazed. He went back to the village later on and thanked her for making him so comfortable. In fact, he could never use the sleeping bag because it was so hot he could hardly breathe. And when he would sleep in that along with the rest of the garb that she had made for him, well, she had made the parka and the pants out of caribou. And it was turned inside out so that the fur would be against the skin, and, of course, the fur of the caribou is hollow. The hairs of the caribou are hollow, so it holds in the heat. But he knew that she'd use something different for the wristbands. And so what occurred is he kept bugging her. She wouldn't tell him. She just won't tell him. Because she had been harassed so much through the years by, quote-unquote, the white man not understanding things and being criticized about different things. But these are people that have lived there for thousands of years and have survived quite nicely. So he eventually finds out from her that the wristbands were made out of husky fur. The dogs, nothing goes to waste among the native Alaskans, and the husky fur is a lot like the caribou, but it's a lot lighter. It's thinner. You don't have the density of the hide. And so putting that around his wrist, he said he never, ever had cold hands again because it was placed right around the main wrist section, and, of course, that warmed the blood flowing into the hands from the arm. So it was quite an education. It's amazing what you can learn. So I think if you're going to do a story about Alaska, you're going to have fun with it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I enjoy the learning part. I should mention we have Great Pyrenees dogs, and they lie out in the snow. They love the snow, and so I'm wondering if their fur is like husky fur, you know?
Yeah, theirs is very thick and even curly. We have a member of family that had the Great Pyrenees on her farm on a hill it's a mountain, for heaven's sakes, in Arkansas. And they took care of keeping the bear away and the cats and all kinds of things. They're wonderful dogs.
Yeah, they're great guard dogs and great livestock dogs, and they're basically big teddy bears, and I'm going to research their fur a little bit and see if it's like husky fur. Maybe I can put something like that in my story.
Well, I think you'd find it fascinating. It's really amazing what different people in their cultural environment, what they learned so that they could survive the terrible temperatures. And up in Alaska, you don't have, I mean, it's cold. You get into certain areas of the far north, and it is just incredibly bitter cold. And they were able to survive it, and they knew how. So it's a lot of fun when you find out about this stuff. Now, you've got a story in here. For those of you that like a woo-woo special, there's this one called A Second Dimension in the Fabric of Time.
Yes.
This one I thought was really cool. So let's talk about this.
Well, this takes place in Mesa Verde, which is down around the Four Corners region in southwest Colorado. And that's fairly near Durango. I've spent a lot of time in Mesa Verde hiking around and so on. And many of your listeners probably know that the Anasazi lived there and then pulled out about 1250 A.D., combination of drought and enemies and so on. And so this is a story about a park ranger in 2010, and all of a sudden she makes contact with an Indian guard from 1250 A.D., and she'll see him for a few seconds. She's kind of looking at the cliff dwellings at night, and all of a sudden they'll come alive. There'll be the smoke and the people and everything that was there in 1250, and then it will disappear. And so she finally takes a picture of him and gives him a pocket watch that she happened to find in the parking lot that day. And, of course, most of the people don't believe her. Come the following summer, one of the cleaners in the cliff dwelling spots a corn cob poking up through the dirt in the bottom, and he knows that this might mean there's something underneath it, so he alerts the park archaeologist, and they very carefully excavate a beautiful pot that's full of corn that's, 700-800 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And as he's pouring the corn out into a bowl, guess what falls out? It's
so
the pocket
watch,
except it's 800 years old.
Oh, this is such a cool story. And you'll have to get the book to find out about the rest of the story. And then, before we close out, I want to talk about the Christmas mouse. Elliot's Christmas mouse. Now, this is a little story, but, oh, it's so cute.
This is a true story. It's about Elliot, who was one of my cats, and he made a contribution to Christmas dinner one year by putting a mouse up on a clean plate, and it was so obvious what he was trying to do, participate with the family, that it was just accepted. I mean, nobody ate the mouse, but he got a nice big piece of turkey. So any of your cat lovers will enjoy that story, and that's a true one.
Oh, it's just such a cool story. Your book is loaded with all of these wonderful, wonderful stories, and I can just tell any of you listening that if you wanted to have a real fun time, maybe on Christmas Eve, and you're serving cookies, and maybe you had some kids around you, but even the adults will enjoy it, and you sort of lowered the lights and maybe have someone sitting in a chair and say, okay, we're going to go back in time and share the stories. It's just magical. It's absolutely wonderful. Now, Murray, your romantic Christmas stories of the Old West, you've got a couple of new ones, and people that would order this from you will be able to get it. What's your website that people can go to find out more about these wonderful books that you've written?
There's two websites, Donna. One is ChristmasWest.com, and the other is MurrayNeighbors.com, MurrayNeighbors. And I actually have a two-for-one special. Anybody who buys the Christmas book, say, as a stocking stuffer or to read around the Christmas tree, gets a free copy of my cat book, The Adventures of Terrence, the Tabby Cat, Terrence, and the Terrible Jack Russell. So get two stocking stuffers for the price of one. The books are available on Amazon.com, but the two-for-one special is only at ChristmasWest.com or MurrayNeighbors.com. And you can also see my other books that I've written. There's a personal development book and three books about novels about the Oregon Trail and so on. Anybody who goes there, leave me a note about your Christmas traditions or stories that you know that are interesting, and I'd really enjoy reading what they have to say.
Oh, I think so. And Murray, you just have a magical touch with your words, and the book is wonderful. But what a wonderful tradition this could be within a family environment, sharing stories, and especially with guests. And I don't know, it's just sort of magical, and kids love stories, and we're all kids at heart. And especially when it involves a little bit of romance and tales of the Old West, this is really wonderful. Romantic Christmas Stories of the Old West. Murray Nabors has been my guest. Check out his website. He's got a wonderful special for you if you'd like to do it. This is a good time to consider it. ChristmasWest.com. It's just in time for the holidays. MurrayNabors.com, and that's MURRAY. Nabors, NABORS.com. Murray, I wish you and your family a fabulous holiday season, and thank you for being with me this year.
Thank you, Donna, and Merry Christmas to everybody who's listening.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprasin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out Toprasin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprasin online or call 845-871-4900. That's 845-871-4900. Be sure to give them the code DS30, and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprasin, non-toxic, safe for children, too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it. Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone number to call in to is 888-627-6008. Why would you call in? Well, you might have a comment about the show if you want, or if you'd like to get a free reading from me on the air, I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Call me at 888-627-6008. Murray Nabors is just such a good writer, but I wanted to share with you a poem that he wrote about the Christmas Eve ghost. And I just think it's so descriptive. It was high Christmas Eve, and can you believe that the ghost of Louis L'Amour came howling in with a cold night wind and began to knock at the door? He said, "I've been gone for a spell, so many stories to tell, and here you are with your pen. If you write all night, you'll be finished by light. It's high time that the telling begin." I said, "But I'm only me, and it's too easy to see that my craft is a pale shadow of yours." "That's as it may be," he nodded towards me. "Don't sit with your back to the door. You've got lots to learn while this candle still burns. I wasn't born writing, you know, and neither was Dickens. The plot only thickens. With practice, it builds up like snow. Neither Haycox nor Gray started writing that way. They polished their craft over the years, and the thing of it then is just to begin and swallow that great lump of fear." I said, "I can try, but you must tell me why you left so many stories untold. Your heroes were many with heroines aplenty, great writing, and all of it sold." He said, "Well, I'll tell you and hopefully sell you. Those old times had the best and the bold. I yarned of the Old West and did my level best with gunfighters and cowboys and gold. But I kind of skipped Christmas. They say, 'Hey, you missed us.' all those spirits, angels, and such. So get started writing, don't ever stop trying, and soon you'll be finding the touch. I picked up my pen and was about to begin when he said, "Whoa there, partner, hang on, write in your own way, but remember to say that the code of the West isn't gone." Then he tilted his hat and said, "I guess that is that," and clomped his way out through the door. "Merry Christmas," he intoned as the wind sighed and groaned. I felt his presence no more. Murray Neighbor's Romantic Christmas Stories of the Old West. Oh, so many wonderful things to share with people. It's just really, really great. And I always think it's fun to find out what created the stimulus for somebody to write, what it was that pushed that creative button that so many times we don't even venture to push within ourselves. And boy, he's got it. It's really great. Okay. Again, give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. Okay, this Saturday, for those of you in Western Washington, I am going to be appearing at the Dickens Festival in downtown Tacoma. This is a marvelous family event. And just, it's absolutely magical. Sleigh rides, you've got teddy bear parades, all kinds of things. And I'm going to be appearing in costume at the King's Bookstore in downtown Tacoma. And I'm going to be doing many consultations, and part of the proceeds will be going towards the charity that the Dickens Festival is going to be celebrating. So if you want to meet with me, come on down to King's Bookstore, where they have a stage and there's poetry readings, there's storytelling, there's musicians performing, and caroler singing. It's a wonderful way to get ready for the holidays, and I'm so delighted that I've been invited back for another year. Well, what are we going to have going on the Donna Sebo Show for the rest of this week? Tomorrow, we're going to be talking about the green stuff. That's money. You want to know how to be financially independent? Well, we're going to have a little bit of financial wisdom to share with you. Danny Kofsky is going to be my guest. And then for those of you who love feng shui, we're going to be talking with Salvador Manzi. And we're going to be talking about how you can use feng shui for life mapping. And then on Friday, Robert Foreman is going to be my guest. His book is entitled Enlightenment Ain't What It's Cracked Up to Be. I love the title, read the book, enjoyed the story, and we're going to be sharing it with you. So if you think sometimes on your spiritual journey you're a little frustrated, well, you need to hear Robert's story, and I think you'll feel a lot better about your life. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. Oh, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Of course, I like to know where you're calling in from. And then just relax and let me tell you what I perceive, and then you can ask me a question about anything you like. I got an email from Betty in California, and it's about a duck. And so I thought I would share it with you because I just thought it was delightful. She said, a woman brought a very limp duck into a veterinarian surgeon. And she put her pet on the vet's table, and he took out his stethoscope, and he listened to the bird's chest. And after a moment or two, the vet shook his head and said, I'm sorry, my dear, but your duck Cuddles has passed away. Well, the woman was very distressed. This had been a very, very close companion for a long period of time. And she just said, oh, my goodness, are you sure? He said, yes, I'm sure. Your duck is dead. How can you be so sure? I mean, you haven't done any testing on him or anything. He might just be in a coma or something like that. She was really distressed. Well, the vet sort of rolled his eyes. He turned around and he left the room. He returned a few minutes later with a black Labrador retriever. Well, the duck owner couldn't believe what she was saying. The dog stood on his hind legs, put his front paws on the examination table, and sniffed the duck from top to bottom. He then looked up at the vet with very sad eyes and shook his head. The vet patted his wonderful dog on the head and took it out of the room. A few minutes later, he returned with a cat. The cat jumped on the table and delicately sniffed the bird from head to foot. The cat sat back on its haunches, shook its head, meowed softly, and strolled out of the room. The vet then looked at the woman and said, I'm sorry, but as I said, this is most definitely 100% certifiably a dead duck. The vet turned to his computer terminal, hit a few keys, produced a bill, which he handed to the woman. The woman went into another state of shock. When she saw the bill, she exclaimed, $150? $150 just to tell me my duck is dead? The vet shrugged. I'm sorry, he said. If you had just taken my word for it, the bill would have been $20. But with the lab report and the CAT scan, it's now $150. Gotcha, didn't I? That's right. Okay. Betty said, pass it on if you want to give somebody a smile. I figure that's worthwhile in the workday week. Donna Sebo here, 888-627-6008. I have just absolutely so much fun when I'm preparing different things for the show. And you never know what you're going to come across in the way of items or material that you want to share. But this one is just, I've got this gorgeous photo of this flocked Christmas tree in front of me and two exquisitely luminous ornaments that are on this flocked tree, and the photographer managed to just get the picture just right. And Nicole Dunley had a little poem that went along with it. It says, branches sugar-coated with snow sparkle in the noonday sun. Nature's Christmas card to us. And Murray said before we went on the show that there's a little bit of snow that is in his part of the world, and apparently they're going to be getting a few other bits of snow, so they're really going to have a nice white holiday season. Well, do you know that there is a secret when you're shopping that you need to be aware of, and this is something that retailers use for good reason. Why do you go to a store? Well, you go there to shop. And sometimes the scents that are in the store area really can create an effect that'll just make you want to buy something before you leave that store. And I know that for a fact because I can remember walking into one store that sold a lot of soaps and wonderful things, but they had these vanilla candles burning, and it was just magical. And I walked out of that store with a few of those vanilla candles, and they just smell as nice at home as they did in the store. Well, if you smell pine or gingerbread and you're hearing classic Christmas tunes, well, guess what? The Journal of Business Research found out. They found that the combination of holiday aromas and music are going to make you happy to open up your wallet. That's right. So they have found in the research that smell and the eyes just automatically create the right environment for purchasing. So it's going to, for many people, be a real stimulus, and that's why you've got to pay attention when you're out shopping, especially if you have a very tight budget. So sometimes, I don't know about you, but I just love to go around the store. So I know if I'm on a budget, I don't take any money with me, or I leave my credit cards at home and checkbook as well, so that I'm not tempted to spend more than what I have allotted. But it's something that those smells and what you see, it's just really magical. It just adds to, I think, the special season flavor. Now, your moods are going to change, so just because you're going to be so happy, there's just this warm, cozy feeling that is often felt when you go into those environments. So just be aware, you don't have to spend a fortune. You can savor and enjoy it all, but you just have to be aware of certain things. This research is done for a reason, because retailers obviously are in the business of business. And so anything that can stimulate that, it's great. It's the same thing with restaurants. Are you aware that they do so much research on restaurants, what colors to use? And red in a restaurant decor, and I learned this years ago from a waitress that worked for a major restaurant chain. And they were educated on the effects of colors in the restaurant environment. And the color red is a very powerful environment because it encourages people to eat faster. Red is a high-energy color, so the restaurant chain, through their surveys and evaluations, realized that people would come in and out of the restaurant very quickly because of the colors of red that were in the decor, carefully placed, so it created the stimulus that people just ate naturally faster. If it was a cool blue soothing, calming, mellow yellow, you wouldn't do the same thing. Fascinating stuff when you do your research. Hey, if you want to find out how to make a superstar resume, got some tips for you here, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and give me a buzz if you want to chat, 888-627-6008. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you. We offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. I wanted to, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. I wanted to give you a few tips that you may or may not be already aware of, but if you want to frost-proof your windshield, what you can do before you go to bed, if you're able to do this without it freezing on you, dampen a sponge in a solution of 1 tablespoon of salt and 1.5 cups of vinegar. 1 tablespoon of salt and 1.5 cups of water. Vinegar. 1.5 cups of water. And wipe your car's windshield. The salty coating will lower the freezing point of snow so it won't stick to the glass. And I thought that's really interesting. I know up in Alaska and different parts of Washington, when the weather's just been really, really cold, you'll come out, you have snow and ice, and it's just, you have to use a scraper to get it off. So this might be something that you would like to try. I've also known of people that have used vinegar water with this, but this especially is 1 tablespoon of salt and 1.5 cups of water. Wipe your car's windshield, and that will keep it from freezing. And something, too, that I just learned about, I was not aware of this. I don't know about you, but I like soft-boiled eggs. And I'll boil them, and then what do? Well, you pour the water out, and obviously you're going to put cool water on it because you want your eggs to cool down. Little did I realize that the water that you have boiled the eggs in is fabulous to use on your plants. And this is why. When the eggs are boiling in the water, calcium is leaching out from the shells, and it's fabulous for your plants. They're going to love it. I just found out about this, and I thought, oh, my goodness. Normally, that water just goes right down the drain. Pour it on your plants indoors. It's great. It's going to make them healthier. especially with the warmer temps inside the house. But it's nutrition for the plants. They just thrive on it. And if you have a gift of a book that you want to give to someone and you find that there's a sticker on the book, you can't get it off without peeling it off, and then you've got that residue of the glue, here's a tip. Take a towel, put it over the book, and press the sticker for a couple of seconds with a medium-hot iron. The heat will loosen the glue, and you'll be able to pull the sticker off, and it won't harm the book. Won't do anything to it at all. Donna Sebo here. How about finding out about a taco pasta beak? For some reason, which I totally understand why, when we're in the holiday season or when you're in the bitter cold temperatures, as all of us in the northern areas of the country are beginning to experience, you want food that's heartier. Just having a lettuce leaf and a slice of tomato is not what you want. Oh, I have to share with you, before I give you this recipe for the taco pasta bake, I have to share with you a personal experience. When I started traveling up to Fairbanks, Alaska on business, I was in temperatures that were 20, 30, 40, up to 70 degrees below zero. I was totally unaware of how, when you're in that kind of cold, the body goes through its own kind of adjustment. And I can remember going to get something for, there was a Safeway store that wasn't too far from where I was staying, so I would walk over, yes, I'd walk, even in below zero temperatures, over to the store. If it really was bitter, then I'd take a cab. But I typically walked, and I would get something, and they had a salad bar, and they had some other things that were there. And I thought, gee whiz, salad bar. Now, I knew it was better to eat the vegetables and this type of thing, but I will, as long as I live, I'll never forget this. One of my early trips up there, I had the macaroni salad, the potato salad, and I thought, when I got back to the hotel, what in the world did I order this for? And I started eating it. It was like it was candy. It was just delicious. And I can remember calling my husband and saying, this is what I had for dinner. I had some macaroni salad, some potato salad. He said, for heaven's sakes, you never eat like that. And I said, well, I don't know, but it tasted great. I didn't have one slice of tomato. I didn't have one piece of lettuce. Well, as it turned out, there was an old-timer Alaskan, and I was meeting with him, and I was telling them how, where normally I could not usually eat stuff like that. That wasn't something that I'd even give consideration to. I said, it's just amazing. I ate this, and I just, my goodness, if I eat like this when I'm up here, I'm just going to get as big as a house. We were joking. And they said, that's very normal. And this woman told me that physicians up in Alaska were really hard-pressed themselves to stay in good shape because of the cold, cold temperatures. Most of the time, people stayed indoors. But they were eating, meals that were loaded with a lot of calories. And they said it's because you're exposed to the cold, and the body will create this demand, and psychologically, you're not aware of it. All you know is, oh, this just tastes so wonderful. Well, it's a reality. So you need to be consciously aware that when you're in real cold temperatures, the body demands more fat, and it's going to demand more carbs because that's part of the survival patterning of the human species in this kind of environment. And it's a fascinating thing to observe, and boy, you can get super chunky really, really quickly unless you're active. That was one of the problems with a lot of the people that worked up on the North Slope in Alaska. They'd have these, they could eat and eat and eat and eat and eat because they were outdoors working in bitter, bitter cold temperatures. I mean, it was nothing for them to consume 700 or 7,000 to 10,000 calories a day. Well, they did this, but they were out in the cold, and the body was using it as fuel to keep them healthy. Well, as soon as they got desk jobs, they'd end up expanding sideways and frontways and backways like you wouldn't believe, and then they'd have to go on a restricted food program because they were so accustomed to having such tremendous volumes of food, and they didn't need it. Their body wasn't using it up. So don't be surprised that you have a craving for things. Uh-oh, I'm going to have to share the taco pasta bake with you perhaps tomorrow. This is really good stuff. If you like Mexican food, you are going to enjoy this. But I'll have to tell it to you tomorrow because, my goodness, we're out of time. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Take time to curl up with a hot toddy, a cup of spicy apple cider, something that where you can just sit in front of the fireplace or in your favorite spot. Take time to read. When the temps are really cold and the nights come in so much earlier in the day than what we would like it to be, it's nice to be able to just be comfortable listening, maybe to nice music, holiday music, and reading. Give yourself that quiet time. It's magical. And who knows, maybe it'll stimulate you to become a writer just like my guest did today. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. I'll be talking with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.